15 in Wicklow.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Fabien Bétrémieux, Registry Services team in the domains division of ICANN. And I'm leading the ThickWiz policy implementation. Thank you for joining us this morning. We are, this is the session, this is the meeting with the implementation, policy implementation. Before we start, I would like to go around the table and account for the IRT members that are with us this morning, as well as experts from the affected parties that have joined our effort. Can we please start maybe with you, Mark?
Good morning, everybody. This is Mark Anderson from
America. Disco Aria, ICANN staff.
Hourly ICANN staff.
Jeff Noakes with Symantec.
Roger Carney with GoDaddy.
Jody Kalker with GoDaddy.
Very much. I've received apologies from Mike O'Connor as well as from Don Blumenthal, who are members of the IRT and who were not able to join us today nor join our remotely. Talking about remote participants, we have several participants, including in particular Barry Cobb, who's also contributing, who's been involved in the PDP working group, I believe. Let's get started. Our agenda today will be similar to that of our usual session. So we'll start with a bit of background and the status of our implementation for people that may be new to this topic. Then we'll move on to discuss our current work on one aspect of the implementation, which is the consistent labeling of who is output for all GTLDs. Then we'll move on to the second aspect of our implementation, which is a transition from thin to 4.com.net and .jobs. And finally, we'll review our timeline. We'll start with the background and the status of the implementation. We're in this initiative, we're implementing a set of policy recommendations that were produced as part of a policy development process. Which completed his work in October 2013. The recommendation that were made by this work by the working group and adopted by the GNSO were adopted by the ICANN board in February 2014. As part of the policy recommendation, we'll review in a minute. There are two outcomes. The transition, as I mentioned earlier, to into thick of for .com.net and .jobs, and the consistent labeling of display for all GTLDs. Of note, there was an implementation consideration in the final report of the working group, which was to propose the decoupling of the implementation of those. So this is just a chart to clarify how the outcomes are tied to the policy recommendation. There are three recommendations in the that came out of the PDP process, which are, as I mentioned, for the purpose of our implementation, seen as being two outcomes. So in terms of recent activity and milestone in our implementation work, with respect to the transition from thin to thick or .com.net and .jobs, released in June a legal review memo, which is a review of law applicable to the transition of data from thin to thick WHOIS model, and that's in line with the recommendation number 3 of the policy. And we've discussed this memo and engaged in initial discussion on potential implementation details with the IRT this summer. And labeling and display of WHOIS output for all GLDs. We've conducted an impact assessment of that of this recommendation and its implications. And we, as part of this work, we've proposed that the implementation of consistent labeling and display be synchronized with other relevant initiatives. I've discussed this impact assessment with the IRT and revised it. And our revision started our discussion on the synchronization of part of the of this implementation with RDAP. And so that's how in June we specified and propose that we rely on RDAP for. And this is in the spirit of reducing the impact on parties and providing, in a sense, economies of scale on changes to implementations, current registry distribution services. We've released earlier this month and prior to this meeting a draft consensus policy language that we hope can help us move forward our discussions towards finalizing such a policy language for at the end of this process. So unless there are any questions or comments on this update, let's hear Mark.
Mark Anderson from VeriSign. Just a question on the legal memo is, I know it was released. I think I saw it released as a draft document, and there was sort of an opportunity to provide comments and feedback on that. Can you just give an update on the status of that? Will there be a final version of that? Are there any other next steps?
Hey, Mark, Krista Papik, ICANN staff. Thank you for that.
Let's now talk about our current work on the consistent labeling and display of who is output for all GTLDs. So I want to come back quickly on this synchronization with the implementation of RDAP. About this representation of what needs to be accomplished as part of consistent labeling and display. What you see on the left is our objective, implementing the consistent labeling and display, and that has an impact on the registration data layer as well as the presentation layer. The impact on the registration data layer is related to the fact that implementing consistent labeling and display will require that some registration data transferred to the registry storage, because not all registries have currently an output that's consistent with the reference RA. So that will require that some, as we will see slides, that some of that data is transferred from registrars to the registries. That's the impact on the registration data layer. And the impact on the presentation layer is that the outputs will all be consistent. So in terms of labeling, that's quite clear from the nomination of this outcome. And so currently the two components of that presentation layer are the web-based output and the WHOIS protocol, port 43 output. What we've discussed is relying on RDAP or that presentation layer, and so that registries do not have to make changes, affected parties do not have to make changes or who is output, port 43 output, and only implement the RDAP protocol as defined by the RDAP operational profile that has been released and that is. And so we would not, as part of this policy implementation, require any changes to the port 43. This is the value of synchronizing. Is there any question on this specific topic? And I'm not seeing any activity in the chat. So what I want to do here is take you very quickly through our the document was the proposed draft consensus policy language. So being that you can decently read the document. We're not going to read the entire document, but I want to give you a sense of what is it that we've shared or discussion with the IRT. So policy language is the eventual product of this implementation. It will be a document listed as part of the ICANN consensus policies and will be a reference for the contracted parties' agreements with ICANN. So what we're trying to do here is propose a draft and discuss this draft with you so as to structure our discussion and work to reach this final product of a consensus policy by ICANN. So the structure of this document, there are two main pieces. What you see here is the policy language we've drafted and we were proposed for discussion. And then we have proposed implementation notes. So those are the two main components of this document. In the consensus policy, we have those three items here listed, and we have a phased plan that we'll talk about as well. What you're seeing here in terms of consensus policy language, we've inserted the first paragraph as for information. Talking about consistent labeling and display for now, but in order to appreciate what would be the final product, we've inserted this first paragraph, which says that the provision of thick data directory services is required for all generic top-level domain registries. That is, the collection and display by the registry of all data associated with both the registrant of a domain name and domain registration itself. So what really this is pointing to the implementation of ThickWiz by all registries. So this is quite specific to the transition, because what this paragraph means is that .com, .net, and .jobs would be thick registries. So this is not part of our discussion, since we want to be discussing consistent labeling at this point, but we wanted to put it here for information and completeness of this draft. So in terms of consistent labeling and display, what is really relevant is paragraph 2 and 3. So as you can see, paragraph 2, the labeling and display of all GTLD registries web-based RDDS output must be with specification 3 of the 2013 RIA, as well as the advisory, what's been called the WHOIS clarification advisory, which has provided clarification for registries and registrars, their WHOIS specification. And the third paragraph refers specifically to the RDAP in relation to the RDAP profile as becoming a requirement for all GTLD registries in order to achieve consistent labeling. And so this is the policy, the paragraphs of the policy, the consensus policy that we're using as a draft for discussion again. And let me mention here quickly the notion of a phased implementation, where we see three phases, and we've discussed here the first two phases in prior meetings. Phase one would be only would apply to all GTLDs excluding .com, .net, and .jobs, and that the case phase two, because this is only consistent in labeling and display. The consistent labeling and display of .com, .net, and .jobs would be achieved as part of the implementation of the transition from thin to thick of those GTLDs, which would be part of phase three. So phase one and phase two are about consistent labeling and display. Phase one would be about making sure that the RDDS outputs are consistent, not including registrar registration expiration date and reseller information, because those would specifically be the focus of phase two. And the reason why we're separating those two phases is that we need to rely on an EPP extension for the transfer of those two pieces of information from the registrars to the registries. So phase two allows more time for that EPP extension to be developed as part of ongoing work. So this is why you can see a proposed effective date for phase one, that would be August 2016, date for phase two, which would be February. So this is the overview of our language at this point, which again is for discussion. And let me, before we discuss it, if you have any questions or comments, I just want to mention that the document includes implementation notes, which are here to provide some background and more clarification on what needs to be done. So I will scroll quite rapidly we have implementation notes for phase one, and we also have implementation notes for phase two. I'm not going to go through them. I will just mention them on a few slides that I have after this. And we also have a placeholder for implementation notes for phase three, which we haven't developed, and we'll get to that. So let me stop here and open it for questions or comments on this language that we've reviewed quickly. And before we get to the discussion of the implementation, are there any comments or questions at this stage? We can also go through the implementation notes and we can also take questions. Would you like to come to the microphone and introduce yourself?
My name is Lutz Donnerhacke. I know I'm late. I'm about 10 years late. According to the current discussion in the European Union and the legislation, change in legislation, and court orders about data permit to data from one country to another. I only want to make the remark that in the earlier who is reviewed had a discussion about an ultra thin WHOIS, so that each party has its own WHOIS service, and these servers can be run under local legislation, follow the local laws of privacy. And I always feared, and now I have very strong feeling that a thick WHOIS approach, horrible mistake. I know that I can't stop it. I want to give it to the protocol. Thanks.
Thank you for your comments. I just want to clarify that this is, we're working the implementation of the policy recommendation that came out of the policy development process were adopted by the ICANN board. And I think that the role of this IRT is to raise and discuss issues related to the implementation. So I think we are here to discuss the issues here. For bringing that perspective into the discussion. So let me move on to the... So I've mentioned the three phases of the implementation. On the timeline, this is what it looks like. what we're showing here on this timeline is the current assumption on the implementation of RDAP, as well as what we've been discussing, the implementation of system labeling and display. You can see here those two phases that I've mentioned. We used to refer to them as consistent labeling and display low impact and consistent labeling and display PP extension for the high impact changes. So this corresponds to our phases. And you can hear that the yellow section, the yellow here refers to phase one. By August 2016, this could be ready for implementation and the policy would be effective then. For phase one. And then we have phase two in orange, which would be ready for implementation or policy would become effective in February 2017. So I mentioned that we, in the implementation notes, we want to help the affected parties understand what this means to them. So we've tried to describe and give a sense, for instance, on what would be the impact on registries. And so depending on the registry, ELD, it could mean reordering and renaming of fields in the web-based RDDS. It means possible changes of data formats, and it could mean the display of new fields. So this, because we're trying to get to a single consistent output, depending on where each of the TLDRs are, be they a new gTLD or a TLD delegated prior to 2012, they may have different specifications. It may be different, but this is the type of impacts may be faced by those registries. Registrars would be affected by this implementation, and that would depend. And the impacts on them would depend on which TLDs they're reading domains for. And what we're expecting is that registrars may need to supply data to some of those registries depending on what is their changes on their output, be it static data, such as the abuse contact, or registration-specific data, such as some contact information or, as we've mentioned, the variation date or the reseller information. And the other impact on registrars is that depending on how immense the necessary changes to labeling and display, channels for transferring the data that needs to be transferred to the registry area. So here, what I can I can give you an example here of the type of analysis we've done in our impact assessment. So we've compared the output of all the TLDs, the specification of the WHOIS output for each TLD or each category of TLD. So here is two. What is our target? That is a consistent labeling and display with spec 3 of the RAAA. So what you're seeing on this slide is the example of our analysis for the new GTLD registries. So we've compared their WHOIS specification 4 of the our registry agreement, the new GTLD registry, with the so that's the currently column, and we've compared that with the spec 3 of the 2013 RAAA, which are reference per the policy recommendation, the column after implementation. So what you're seeing here, what is green is things that fields that won't change on the web-based output. In blue is what the data that's already existing but that may need a different labeling or potentially a different format. So format is not an issue here, more of labeling. And what's red is either information that's missing and that will need to be displayed. Or that mainly what it is, missing information. So you see here that, for instance, for new GTLDs, what this the implementation of consistent labeling and this will mean is that they will need to change the labeling of what they have as domain ID or who is server or referral URL or sponsoring registrar, registrar and registrant ID. I think we have more changes here as well. I mean, ID, tech ID. So that's going to be labeling impact, just changing the label of that field. And in terms of new data, we have the registrar creation date that will need to be included, and we have the registrar abuse contact and reseller information. This is, again, only for new GTLDs, and I just wanted to provide this as an example.
Mark Anderson, I'm... just looking at that, the registry expiration date and the registrar registration expiration date, those aren't necessarily the same, and you have them listed as new data, but I would sort of reading that, I would take that to mean that the registry expiration date goes away in favor of the registrar expiration date. I'm not sure that's desired.
This is Francisco Arias from I Can Staff. I think there is a typo in the slide. What is meant is that you will add the register expiration date, but the register is going away.
So, sure.
This is Joe Waldron from VeriSign. So you're saying that in the after implementation on this slide, where it's our registration expiration date, that should
there, it should be two fields there.
Two fields.
Yes,
okay.
So register expiration date. Yes, missing the register expiration date.
So you're asking. So this is the example of what the WHOIS output would look like for both registrars.
The policy is only changing registry output. Right.
They would have this output.
But the policies only affect the GTLD registry, so the registrars do not have to change.
So maybe I can ask a registrar. Do you currently provide both registry and registrar expiration dates? Sorry to put you on the spot.
This is Jody Calker from GoDaddy. I believe only show the R expiration date.
So maybe we could just take this offline to make sure that we reconcile any of the issues.
Seems like this is Dan Halloran from ICANN, like a good thing to discuss here, because it is okay. A new world, I think, where in my experience, I've seen a lot of WHOIS records, and usually if you're looking at a registry, they show you the registry expiration date. You're looking at a registrar, you see the registrar expiration date. This could be a little confusing for users maybe, but now I don't know if this is going to help people or confuse things further, or like what would a user think if they saw that those two dates. And sometimes there's an explanation, I think, VeriSign, maybe there's a little explanation at the bottom about expiration dates, or I've seen at some registries the registrar expiration date might be different, or registrars might say the registry expiration date might be different. I think it's worth talking about.
Yeah, this is Joe again. Yeah, so we could talk about it, and I think part of the reason that there has historically been differences is where the registry is done an auto renewal. RAAA may not reflect that in their WHOIS. So I think it may add to end user confusion if in the WHOIS records that we're identifying that there are two different expiration dates. So what we're trying to accomplish, why we're changing the behavior. So what's driving that?
This is Francisco. So the attempt here is to implement the policy, and this was our attempt to implement bar where it says that the output of the GTL registries has to be consistent with the format in the spec of the 2013 RIA, which include this field, the registration expiration date. But of course, if there is a better idea how to do that.
Mark, to you, and then I think we have a question from the chat.
It's Mark Anderson. I just want to emphasize the key word there, consistent. The policy was not make the WHOIS output exact same as what's in the 2013 RAA. It was we picked that at the time, keeping in mind both the 2013 RAA was not finalized when the PD was going on, nor was the new GTLD registry agreement. We had non-final documentation to work with, but the PDP felt it was important that we have a consistent output. But our intent was not to say it has to be exactly. Language in there is consistent, not exactly the same. Thank you.
All right, we have a input from Lorna Gradden from the remote participant. He's from a Cum Laude registrar. His question is, I also see the server status is missing from post-implementation. Will that still appear?
Yes, so I think Lorna is referring to the last, so right before registrant ID, we have the main status server update prohibited that doesn't appear in the output of the after implementation. I don't think this is to mean, and that's the difficulty with the examples, this is not to mean that server status are not shown anymore. This is just because we've taken the example output in the three of the RA and the example output of spec 3 of the RAA 2013. So we haven't created a new example of exactly what, like, so we were just comparing. So to answer the question directly, no, the server statuses would still be displayed. Obviously, this is just because there can be a variable number of those. What our example comparison here shows, but it's not meant to mean that we would not have the server status anymore. Did I answer the question? Well, it does. Any other questions, comments? Part of our implementation notes, I don't also mention that made a note for the specific situations of .cat, .name, and .tail, who have specialized WHOIS related provisions in their registry agreement. And we will need to look into more details here as to how those visions interact with the requirement of consistent area that needs further work, in addition to any of the topics identified. So I think the reason why we mention these implementation notes and we bring those here is that we'd like to hear from you in terms of additional considerations that should be in those notes or elements that need to be clarified. So I think we've identified that we need clarifications around the registry expiration date. We may need other clarifications. So I think this is an opportunity for you to contribute. So there will be other opportunities, but I'm mentioning it here so that you're aware that we are seeking your. So before we move to discussing the transition from thin for .com.net and .jobs, are there any comments or questions? I hear none. I don't see any questions. So let's move on to the second outcome of our policy, which is the transition from thin to thick, and as we mentioned, for .com.net and .jobs. And as we've mentioned, we see this as a phase three in the policy language that we've drafted for your consideration. So we've started discussing the implementation details after the draft of the legal review memo was posted to the IoT. And among those considerations, we've received a number of those questions are listed here. Should the processing of existing and new registries as part of the processing of part of implementing the transition from thin to thick, conflict jurisdiction be considered at registrant or registrar level? Are that as a mechanism to mitigate conflict jurisdiction policy recommendations? So I think that's a question that we've brought ourselves. How should the implementation plan account for Section 3.3.1 in the 2013 RA, which mandates port 43 UEs for thin registry only? Privacy proxy services may be an alternative to transferring data. Could there be an option for transferring domain name registries? Such services are not offered by a registrar record. Parties would be responsible for implementing potential regional doors that was proposed as part of the bill review memo. So those are questions that are currently open and that we would like to further discuss and gather more input for consideration and drafting of implementation notes, draft consensus policy language we've shared.
Anderson, I'd like to jump in on the first one, should processing. I'd like to very much encourage us to take separate paths on those things. I think they each present different challenges. There's no reason to tie one to the other. I think they can be handled parallel and separate tracks. I think just to clarify, we're talking about a transition from new registrations going from requiring or not allowing thick data at all, optional and ultimately requiring it for the existing thin registry. Part of that, the processing of existing, we're talking about the back data for existing registrations. They present very different challenges, and we shouldn't tie the two.
I would agree with that. It's going to be very difficult should be separated, because with the existing registration, very long time to get good data. In WIS was the Wild West with how contact laid for a very long time. And when transfers are to registrars, that data was very hard to parse, which meant that data most likely did not get in correctly into the base, and now registrars are going to be required to clean up that data. It's going to take a very long time. With .org, I think we did this 10 years ago. I think we're under 1 million registrations for .org at the time. And we're talking about 100 data than that now. And with .org, I believe we were still seeing existing registrations being GoDaddy that had bad data. It was at least a year after the transition had started, and I'm going to take a very long time to get the existing registration.
So I understand that we have this question that has certainly a lot of work that needs substantial discussion in the work. Are there any of the other questions? Do you have any comments on the other discussion questions or new ones that you'd like to have?
This is Joe. So just to kind of add on to Jody's point, I understand the work to get the data cleaned up, but I think we also have to recognize that the work necessary requirements that we talked about last time when we challenged for existing registrations, then a new registration, whatever those terms are, can be on the assessment that the registries and registrars conduct requirements for consent. I know that we've heard back from a number of registrars that they believe that they have from each registrant. So that is, again, something that is a fairly heavy lift for registrars, especially when they're getting that information through their reseller. So that reseller component is something that I appreciate you bringing up, because I don't think we've...
And I think that's a nice segue into the second question. How... where should those build challenges in terms of obtaining consent or requesting consent and identifying a registrant or registrar level consideration? So I think it would be interesting for us to get some sense of what registrars think about this specifically as well.
Go, Daddy. I was just wondering, could you explain the conflict jurisdiction?
So I think the concept of conflict jurisdiction comes from recognition of the legal review memo that there may be legal up data, and that in this case, those would be considered conflict jurisdiction for which there may need to be mitigations implemented as part of the transition from when, for instance, RDAP came in as a consideration for such or the regional data stores, for instance, as posed in the review memo. Does that clarify the...
Sorry, but I think we've talked already about this during the PDP and the work. I didn't think it was a problem anymore. So.
For the record, can you state your name?
Frédéric Guillemot, Save France. So is that really still a problem? At that time, we had discussed that, and as the, when they were registering domain names, they were accepting terms and conditions, so that allowed us to transfer some data.
Yeah, I think we, this is Joe Walburn. So I think we did talk about that last time, and I do is, especially when you're backfilling data, without knowing what the registration agreement was at the time the registrant accepted terms, the ability to, for a registrar to transfer and store and display that data may not be granted at the time of the initial registration, and that's where the feedback that we've gotten is we've gone out and talked to a number of registrars that some registrars believe that that they will have to go obtain consent individually from each registrant.
Be done at the renewal time, maybe. Which makes it it makes us easier. It makes our life easier. So our life easier to wait for 1 year and then have all data transferred and the acceptance on the. Or if we are in a hurry. Okay, it's a problem, but if we are not in a hurry, and we are not in a hurry because this working group has been lasting for...
Yeah, I think we have considered doing, having a program where that was done at renewal. That does present a problem, perhaps, with, those registrations. So you potentially could be, it could be a 10-year problem. Now, that's not the majority of names, I recognize that. I think part of the question is what worked for each registrar. And I'm not sure that...
Alex Rittner from Two Cows. I'm not sure if we can do a lot about this in this group. Maybe about the terms and conditions that every registrar has with their customer. I have no idea how that situation may actually play out with the individual registrar. Also, I would see that if you have used a uniform registration agreement and you have offer.org, you would be in a position to have transferred registrant data to a registry and have needed to collect consent to doing that. So to me, the case seems to be primarily with registrars who have offered XDLDs, which is common net for the past, I don't know. I don't know how big the problem really is. And even if there is a problem, I think we could only solve it on a registrar level by looking at the agreements we have, figuring out a way how to obtain that consent if we deem this consent as necessary.
Well, I'll give you an idea of what the potential scope is. That last I saw that we had somewhere north of 1,500 registrars accredited and operational for .com, and I don't think they're going to be registrars be impacted because that may be the only TLD we're offering. And I'd also say that as a registrant where I've gone in and read the terms and conditions for several registrars where I've registered names, there are often call-outs on a per TLD basis. So I think it is something that has to be looked at on a registrar by registrar or whoever is executing those agreements with the registrar. Sent requirements that were discussed in the analysis are met. I think that's not a simple task when you look at 1,500, and I saw a post that now 1,000 accreditations or more than that. So we're still seeing additional accreditations come in. So the problem being larger where you've got a lot of registrars that are only selling COM, and when you've got 2,000 registrars around the world, each with registrars most likely in multiple jurisdictions, registries purview, to try to understand that.
So I don't want to play it down, but just to inform the discussion, from a wholesale level, we see a lot of registrars who may be accredited for CommonNet themselves and then still offer the other TLDs through as a reseller through other registrars. So they still cover it in their agreements, even though they're not accredited. Just to inform the discussion.
Here, I think we're seeking that sort of discussion and input that you're bringing to the table. So I don't know if you're aware, but we've tried to bring more registrars, in particular in an expert, what we call the group of experts from affected parties. So if you would be interesting to join our discussion on a more regular basis, that would be... are there any other questions that participants would like to ask on this slide? I'm thinking the next one, RDAP, sure.
Oh, are you going to RDAP now? Okay, yeah, that's where I was going to
go. Great, okay. Go for it.
Yeah, so we talked about RDAP last time, and I think you had a great slide that kind of showed an alternate path that relied on RDAP where consent was not obtained for whatever reason, either. And I know that there is separate work going on related to RDAP here, within the IETF. I mean, there's still a lot of active work going on. So I think that this is something that is worth exploring. So I think that we do need to stay very closely aligned with the RDAP work that's being done to ensure that we have divergent paths in the RDAP
profile. Morning. I think this is the best time for my intervention. It will be very short. My name is Peter Kimpian. I'm coming from the Council of Europe, representing the TPD, which is an advisory body to the Convention 108, data protection. So I'm very new in ICANN, and I'm basically, I just wanted to communicate the message that Council of Europe really would like to get involved, if need be, into ICANN's work from that perspective of data protection and privacy, because these are hard issues, and I'm listening to your conversation, and definitely I don't want to go into details now, but I think there are some considerations that maybe we can bring at the table. So I don't know, maybe this is because I heard some opinion that maybe it would be the best at the registrar's level, but as it's an implementation strategy or in working group, maybe as my personal opinion is always good to input as many details in the implementation to facilitate data controllers, as we call them, fulfill their obligation. So that's it. I will stop here now. I just wanted to convey this message so we are ready to work together. So please feel free to contact us anytime, and definitely we'll be around and help ICANN developing its policies back. Thank you.
Thank you. Can you just for the record restate your name so we make sure we have your information?
Yes, my name is Peter Kimbart, which I will give to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So coming back to the specifically RDAP topic, I think we would also like to get a sense of what you think in terms of how RDAP would be consistent with the policy recommendations, because that's one of the reasons why we raised this topic. We really would like to hear what the IRT thinks of this topic.
So, Mark Anderson, I think this is very interesting. During the PDP, I don't think we spent a lot of time talking about mitigating conflict. And I think if you look at the question as it's written, you know, is it consistent with the policy recommendations? I mean, I'm not sure it is, but more just because we didn't have this as a mechanism at the time we were going through the PDP. I think our RDAP gives us some tools we didn't have or didn't even really envision we had at the time. So, you know, is it consistent? I don't know that it is or it isn't, but I think we should consider it, you know, because like I said, it gives us some tools we have, and it gives us some options that we didn't have that I think will be valuable, you know, as we...
Just on the other line, how should the implementation plan account for Section 331? Could you just summarize for me what Section 331 is? I know you know it by heart.
No, so I actually don't, so I'm happy that I wrote it on the slide. No, I've tried to make it clearer by mentioning that this is a section that mandates Port 43 WHO is for thin registries only. So my understanding is that 2013 RIA registrars are mandated to maintain a Port 43 WHO is out only for thin registries, which means that when .com.net and .jobs are transitioned into thick WHOIS, that provision would not, the requirement for providing a Port 43 WHOIS for those registrars would not exist anymore. And so I think the question here is, how does that get integrated into the plan, and what does that mean for those registrars?
Want my advice, maybe I'm not, I don't have the same advice, but as soon as possible, let's get rid of it, and let's leave the registries, carry the WHOIS.
Roger Carney, Godet. The way I interpret the 2013 agreement and this policy recommendation here is that, we get the option to stop supplying 43, but the way I read it also is registrars won't have to support RDAP servers either. The policy says ComNet and jobs aren't a part of phase one and two, so we only have to provide port 43 until THIC is done for ComNet and jobs, meaning we don't have to do RDAP as well if we choose not to.
From ICANN. So, yeah, the place ago we were talking about this after another session. Yeah, it's a good point. We haven't time to review in more detail. So far, the on the RDAP side of things, the draft RDAP profile that we have for discussion is currently considering that there will be implementation of RDAP in both registries and registrars, but it's certainly something that we need.
Mark, again, correct me if I'm wrong. I believe the way it's written, it is the obligation for port 43 goes away with once the registrar web, who is still there. The option is that registrars could operate their own Whois service, or they could have a web front end that points to the registry's port 43 system. So it's I think the implication here is that registry since we're tying RDAP to this, the implication is that registrars would have the option of pointing their web front end at the RDAP back end. That's the real implication here that we're talking about.
Roger, Carney. And Mark, you're saying that registrars could point the RDAP back in, meaning Bear Signs or Donuts or whoever's, right? Okay.
Yeah, this is Mark. I mean, I think, my understanding of the way it's written is it's really up to the registrars. The registrars choose to operate their own based on their own authoritative data, or they could have their web front end point, directly to the registries and but that, the web requirement doesn't go away. It's just port 43 requirement that is no longer.
Roger Carney, and then I agree with how Mark's reading that because that's the way I read it as well.
This is Francisco from ICANN. So just to see if I understand what you guys are saying. So the proposal that I'm hearing is that you're saying a registrar will have a simple implementation of RDAP that will simply provide redirections to the. Whatever the registry is of the name that is being requested. Is that what he's saying?
And I think we get back to just for the web interface, that's all that we would be required to support. We wouldn't actually have to support any response to Whois 43 or RDAP server requests. We would only have to respond to web requests.
This is Marty. They wouldn't actually need an RDAP instance at all because your web interface is essentially your RDAP client. Right, web is an RDAP client, so they'd be able to basically create a web front end for the registry's RDAP.
Yeah, I think I know what I was getting wrong. The confusion by the fact that RDAP is a web service, I think how I read the content, there is a call for a web based Whois, which I think is a different thing. That's the requirement that stays with the registrars. And the registries have also, that's referring to, let's say, a pretty HTML page where a common user can do Whois request. And there is RDAP, which is we could consider here as a great service. So what you're saying is registrars should not do anything on RDAP.
But, Roger Carney, I'm just suggesting they're not required to. I mean, if they choose to provide their own service, fine. But the way I read it, they're not going to be required to have an RDAP server, just the web interface.
Yeah, for the record, this is Mario, I'm nodding my head. Yeah, that's my understanding is how I read it. And also, I mean, it's redundant. It wouldn't serve any purpose for them to have to maintain their own. It's redundant, and it presents the possibility of having out of sync data, which is certainly one of the things we wanted to avoid as part of the PDP is have not have out-of-sync data.
This is Francisco again. So to your point, Mark, I guess it makes sense you're saying there is no need if you have only redundant data. But if we look at the bullet number 3 here, there was at some point a decision to use the RDAP linking feature as a way to mitigate the conflict jurisdiction issue. Then I guess you don't have redundancy there. It's the registrar has a set of information only the registrar has. So we're saying in those cases, if we were to choose to go that path, the registrar would still have to provide RDAP.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think that gets back to what I said before, where this is, it's a tool we didn't have at the time. I mean, we certainly didn't contemplate anything remotely like this during the PDP process, but, you know, I think it's something we should consider, because tool, you know, it's a tool in the tool belt. You know, it's a tool we didn't have before. You know, it's an option, but, you know, like I said, the way the bullet point is written, is it consistent with policy recommendations, right? Because we didn't consider it at all. But from attention and concerns around privacy, I think it's absolutely something we should consider.
This is Jody from GoDaddy again. I'm just curious, before process or concerned about, is that if you're trying to gather contact from a registrar that has maybe turned off port 43, who is a registrar do?
This is Francisco, just a clarification question. Are you talking about, you're not talking about the turning port 43 off their RDAP implementation, right? You're talking about turning off port 43 for a registrar in the case of a registry that is tick. Is that what you're asking?
Off after, you know, that once ComNet and jobs is thin or thick, all the data is at registry. And a registrar turns off port 3 is turned off by a registrar that hasn't completely uploaded their, or they thought that they completely uploaded. Another registrar is trying to get transfer data or contact data away on the customer, and there is no contact data because it hasn't been transitioned to VeriSign and the port 43 has been turned off.
This is Joe. So that I think is the point. So I have part of the language I'll read here. So registrars shall provide an indirect page with respect to any GTLD operating a thin registry. A port 43 service providing free public based queries. So I don't think the language is specific enough to say at what point do you have the option, right? So theoretically, say, as soon as the registry supports thick, that you have the option to turn off your 43 access. I don't think that that's the intent, though. The intent is that when all of your data has been migrated, that you would turn it off. But I don't know that... That's up to this working group to specify the, you know, exact conditions. Maybe, you know, that's a perhaps. But I guess the way I would interpret this is that, on a registrar-by-registrar basis, you would make the decision about when and if you would ever turn it off, when and if you would implement RDAP, because what we talked about last time was having RDAP alternative based on a certain consent scenario. So I think that there may be various models that apply to ours, but ultimately what needs to happen is, you know, have thick data or have access to that thick data through an RDAP model, and then I think it's really on a registrar-by-registrar basis. So if it takes you 10 years to backfill the last record, then that's probably the time that you off your port 43 access. If you get it done in a week, for you.
Real problem is if you really want to do your job, wait for 10 years, or you wait for 5 years. Then sometimes we also rely on some other registrars who don't really care after, and when we want to transfer, it's going to be complicated. I can be able to do maybe with escrow, because you have all the data. The escrow. We have to send you every week all the data for all our domain names. I don't know if you... No? Don't think it could be used as a backup plan?
Alex Redden, I don't think we want to go down the road of ICANN providing a centralized choice for all from whichever source. I don't think we want to do that. You can read the language to enforce port 43 who is for a name that hasn't been transferred or loaded to thick who is. Just by the language, you have to provide it for all registered names under your registrar. I think if the registrar is not compliant, even though it's cumbersome, you could go down the route of...
I mean, this is Roger Carney. Isn't that... in our purview here, though, just to clarify that in our policy? I mean, we can say, hey, until your registrations are completely over, say, in our policy.
I think this is a type of discussion we want to have, and potentially that's a valid question. I just want to do a quick time check. We have 5 minutes left. I have just an overall timeline slide to go in terms of timeline assumption. I just want to make sure if you have any other discussion point, let's take another so we have those... like 2 or 3 minutes at the end before our... Any other questions, comments on potentially the other questions we have here? None? Okay. Sure, I think this is a very valuable discussion, and we're
grateful for your sharing your perspective. In terms of timeline, so in August we shared the current assumptions then. We've shifted a bit the timeline since time, obviously, sorry, let me, we've adapted our, so there's been a shift of time perspective here in between those two slides. This one did not have 2017 on it, and this one has now. Because of those discussions we're having, we expect that we will probably need more time than we expected last time we shared this timeline. So current assumptions, although they're certainly, you know, will depend on our discussions and our finding, pleading those discussions. Currently, we expect that this is what the timeline, what it would look like. I think we've had discussions before where a year and a half timeline to implement the transition would be kind of a minimum. So this is assumption we are maintaining in all this. What this means in terms of overall timeline assumption for the implementation of this policy and all its components, you're merging the two parts of the timelines we've brought this presentation. RDAP, again, as our reference for synchronization. I think there is a session later today regarding RDAP, so any discussion of that part of the policy, consistent labeling and display. I've mentioned the two phases with a first policy effective date for phase one, which would be August 2016. Yellow here, consistent labeling and display, low impact. And the second phase two for what we used to call the high impact implementation, that would be, if this could be effective in February of 2017. And as far as transition from thin to thick, again, qualified, but currently we're expecting that vision would carry across 20. Completes the. Sure.
So I think, if I'm not mistaken, Fabian, we need some input from the IRT on policy language. Mm-hmm. Like, what's the timeline for that? What do we need from them by when? And then, with respect from transition, for really good discussion in here, but we can't, sounds to me like we need still more discussion or information in place where we can talk about policy language. Or next steps. So if maybe we could just clarify what we need from them and what the next steps are with respect to consistent labeling and display as well as...
Yeah, thanks, Krista, so for clarifying. And I think in the immediate term, we certainly are seeking your input on the draft consensus policy language we shared so that we can finalize the consistent labeling and display part, and we can then push comments in parallel to... the RDAP operational profile be submitted for public comment. So we will communicate on the mailing list and propose a deadline for you to provide your comment. And then we'll certainly organize a meeting after that deadline so that we can discuss the comments we've received. So given the fact that we are currently planning for a public comment period that would be starting before the end of the year, we would certainly appreciate if you could provide your feedback quite rapidly in the next 2 weeks. We'll confirm that on the mailing list, but I think that would be the type of time frame by which you'd like to have your input. That's on the draft consensus policy language, so that then we can discuss your feedback, a final version that can be submitted for public comment. does that cover you? So I think, yeah, next steps on the discussion, I think we'll use that opportunity that we'll create to discuss your input on the consistent labeling and further our discussions on the details of the implementation.
Sorry, one last question, if I may. This is Joe Waldron. So I think a lot of people have seen the out recently about the EU ruling about safe harbor. I know new information about the – I know it was referenced a number of these were referenced in the legal guidance. Specific information about what the Russian laws are now requiring in terms of that information. So I'm wondering whether those types of issues are appropriate within this group, or I know that there were a lot of discussions in, there's a GAC public safety working group, there are a number of different going on. So as we are doing the analysis of, from the registry perspective and the registrar's seat, storage, transmission, display of all the data. This really goes beyond the broader impact. Now, this consensus policy applies to all GTLD, so I'm just wondering how that, or have we considered that? may not have framed that question very clearly, but I just see a lot of turn right now in the privacy world in terms of what new laws are coming up. I know the EU is supposed to have regulations out by the end of the year. As we're trying to get our arms around the risk to our company in terms of storage and display of the data, really does go beyond just this policy work.
Thanks, Joe. Krista Papik, ICANN staff. So I know there have been new developments very recently related to, I'm not as familiar with the Russian reference, but related to the EU and their recent, I don't know if ruling is the right word, but related to safe harbor. And it's something that we are looking at from a staff perspective across not just this particular project, but how it affects all of our contracted parties. So not even just registries and registrars, but anybody that ICANN does business with. So there's a sort of a overarching project or discussion going on in SAT. I think that these are, they're also good policy implementation. And I guess I would actually, you guys are the implementation review team. You know, you're here to help us help you, for lack of a better way of putting it. Theoretically, if not arguably, you were part of the development of the policy recommendations. And so if there is something that new that's coming up that you think impacts that, I'd almost turn the question back around to you. Sorry to do that. But, you know, what are your thoughts on that? Is that something that needs to be further discussed back in the GNSO, or is it something we can address here? And, again, I would maybe look to the IRT to hear what you guys think about that.
You kind of got to the core of my question, which is, should we declare that as out of scope? Is there a component of that that we should be referring back and saying a lot of information here that is something that really is outside of the charter of what we're doing? When you start looking at the scope of all GTLDs, other contracted parties, I'm not sure that I'm prepared to tackle, within this. I don't want to derail the work that we're doing here. For all of that other activity that's going on. But I think we just need...
For your comments, Joe. Thank you all for joining our session. And again.